Scott Hughes, Rick Horton.
This is a season like no other.
Unbelievable start from Hamilton.
He's just insane.
Oh, the touch! Verstappen is into the lead. Come on.
This is the F1 podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello there, we are back again. I'm Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And this is the Two Soft Compounds. I always forget how dramatic that new intro is. Do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me a little bit of Thriller. You know, the voice in Thriller.
Oh, really?
Yes. Well, you know, the land.
The voiceover guy I got from Fiverr. You know, where you pay a fiver for people to do things like voiceovers? And on the demo, he sounded like a Hollywood, you know, trailer voiceover bloke. And then when he did the job for us, I'm like, oh, okay. He sounds like Gunter Steiner.
Did he come back and say, what do you expect for a fiver?
Not really, but he may as well have done.
Clues in the title. Well, it was a good first race, wasn't it? I was a bit concerned at first. I thought it was going to be a little bit of a boring race, but then it all sort of spiced up towards the end. And we've got a definite order now, haven't we? I mean, the Ferraris looked absolutely tremendous. What's been interesting that I noticed is the Red Bull, very fast, but very unreliable. Yep. The Ferrari was fast and reliable, and the Mercedes, very reliable, but not very fast. So it's interesting that you've got these kind of top three teams. But I think reliability is going to pay quite a bit of an issue this year because, you know, the Red Bull were looking good for 2 and 4, weren't they, at one point?
Well, you know what? I think I thought that I said to the missus, I said, you know what? The 5 cars might finish this race because, you know, reliability will definitely be a factor and the teams really don't know where they are from testing in race pace. I thought reliability was going to be a massive issue. And then, of course, it wasn't really. I mean, we had the 2 Red Bulls who failed towards the end of the race and we had the fire with Pierre Gasly. But apart from that, everyone else looked pretty reliable. I mean, I think the thing for me after testing was that, you know, I thought McLaren looked as though they'd really got the handle on the bouncing during testing, and I thought they looked okay. And then we went into this race weekend, and they are absolutely nowhere. I mean, they are fighting for the final positions in the race, and it's really, really disastrous for them.
Yeah, 2 things that I found really interesting. Like you say, the McLaren team, they look so... Lando is Mr. Happy, isn't he? And he looks so dejected after the race because I think in his head he was kind of like, oh, we are literally right at the back. That's a lot of work to get us to midfield, let alone anywhere near the front. So you could see he's kind of just that dejected feel. And obviously Ricciardo, the same Ricciardo, had no testing time because of his COVID. And then he had his issue in the warm-up races and the practices as well. So, you know, they really were on the back foot, but just horrendous. And the other thing that stood out to me was Carlos Sainz, who was brilliant in that Ferrari the year before and brilliant in the McLaren. And almost any car you put him in, he drove the wheels off it and you know, came across as a very underrated driver, which obviously got him the seat in Ferrari. He's now struggling in this new era of cars. He's, you know, he can't quite get to grips with it. Obviously, he finished second and he qualified well, but you could tell even he was a bit frustrated with the performance he put in compared to Charles Leclerc, who drove the wheels off the car. So it just goes to show, doesn't it? You have to really get that sweet spot of these new cars and driving styles. I think I heard Charles Leclerc as well. He said at one point he's tried sort of 5 or 6 different driving styles just to kind of get the sweet spot of driving style. And it's amazing that, you know, they try these things. You know, these drivers are the best drivers in the world. You would think that they would find a great driving, you know, great way of driving a car and they'd just stick with that across their career. But they're constantly updating how they drive and oversteer, understeer, what they do to the car to make it the best they can. Hamilton's always said that as well, that, you know, he's taken stuff from karting and he's taken stuff from his early career and he drives, you know, smoother now than he did before. He was much more erratic at the start. And it's fascinating how they evolve as drivers, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, a good example of that, and I was talking to my missus about this yesterday when we were watching the race. Damon Hill was a pundit on Sky for the race yesterday, and I raced against Damon Hill in a 24-hour go-kart race about 4 years after he'd retired from Formula One, and he was brought over, this was in the Middle East, he was brought over by British Airways, and he was put in their team. He did the first stint of that particular race, and the team started in 16th. That's where they qualified. And by the end of the first lap, Damon Hill was second. And it just goes to show that these drivers are really the best in the world. I mean, it's just incredible the skills that they have compared to mere mortals like me and you. But I just felt desperately sorry for McLaren because they do have two very skilled racing drivers, of course they do, and they were right at the back, and Aston Martin must be scratching their heads as well because their performance was just woeful. I thought it was amazing that Nico Hülkenberg came back after getting a phone call on Thursday night and travelling to Bahrain to arrive on Friday morning, having not done any pre-season testing, having not been in a Formula One car for over 12 months. I found it amazing that he out-qualified Lance Stroll.
Yeah, and I think this is the thing, isn't it? I think some of these drivers are just very good, you know, natural drivers, and they can pretty much get in any car and drive the wheels off it. Another great example of that is Fernando Alonso. You know, you can put him in a Dakar rally car, in a normal rally car, in a Formula One car, in a 24-hour Le Mans car. Whatever you put them in, they seem to drive the wheels off it. And this is the thing, I think certain drivers just have that natural talent. Hamilton's another one. And then there's other drivers that are much more specialist, aren't they? Where they'll get in, they'll go from a Formula One car to an Indy car, and they'll be terrible or they'll be great. And it's interesting how some drivers just adjust differently. You know, K-Mag's another great example. Kevin Magnussen, yeah. Just, what a performance from the Haas team. And again, you know, Kevin Magnussen had very little pre-knowledge of this drive. You know, it all happened in the last few weeks, didn't it, where he replaced Marzipan. And it's just been fascinating how he's got in that car, literally like he's never been anywhere. He's just got in it and gone, wallop, here we go, have some of that, and then finish fifth. An incredible drive from Kevin Magnussen as well.
Yeah, it kind of shows the weakness of Mick Schumacher a little bit, I think, because he was much further down the pecking order on the race, in the race, I should say. K-Mag, yeah, hit the ground running. And you can imagine if Mazepin had still been in that car, they probably would have been languishing, you know, towards the back of the grid, both cars. But with K-Mag, you know, top 10 finish, fantastic. Out-qualified a Mercedes on the first race of the season. You know, really, really good.
The Ferrari-powered cars as well, even the Alfa Romeos. I mean, Bottas again did a very good performance. I wasn't expecting that. And there was quite a few shocks, which were nice. It's great to see Ferrari back at the top. I was surprised that the Williams team were as slow as they were. I thought they might be a bit more midfield this time round. But, you know, a lot of stuff to work on here. Reliability is going to be a big thing, particularly for the Red Bull team, I think. If they're going to lose the titles this year, it's going to be reliability issues, isn't it? Because that car looked very fast, you know. Perez wasn't the greatest qualifier in previous seasons. He qualified pretty well in this race. I think it was his best qualifying, wasn't it? So, you know, he was up there as well. So it looked really good for Red Bull. And obviously Ferrari won this, you know, obviously on pace, but also on reliability. So just fascinating to kind of see them evolve like that. Great to see Ferrari back at the top. Like you say, very surprised at McLaren being so far down. Surprised a little bit at the Williams team, but also surprised at Haas and Alfa Romeo being so far up, which is great.
Well, you look at all the Ferrari-powered cars did well. All the Mercedes-powered cars did not do well, apart from the Mercedes Works team, who were lucky to get a podium, you know, with Hamilton. But it's clear that Mercedes, whilst they have issues with their aerodynamics and their porpoising, they also have an engine issue. You know, it's just not faster than the Ferrari at the moment, and they've got a lot of catching up to do. Red Bull, with the Red Bull powertrain, as they now call it, which is basically the Honda engine they inherited, with lots of Honda mechanics, by the way, and they also poached a bunch of Mercedes engine experts to go into the Red Bull powertrain team, must be scratching their heads because, you know, like you say, the engine and the car looks fast. They've sorted out the aero. They were all beaming, smiling faces across the paddock in the Red Bull camp on Friday and Saturday when they qualified very well and tested very well. And then it came to the race, it all looked good, and the reliability just wasn't there. They've got to iron that out. Surely that's something they can sort out with software updates and things before we get to Saudi Arabia this coming weekend.
Yeah, I found it very telling as well that the Mercedes team and Lewis Hamilton particularly celebrated that podium like it was a win. They were, you know, they obviously didn't see that coming, and they were like, this is amazing, we're on the podium, you know, keep working, guys, keep at it. And I think the fact they got that excited about getting a podium, it was just such a shock to them because they expected to be kind of fifth and sixth at best, I think. So that was kind of telling because, you know, that's something we're not used to seeing from Mercedes over the last couple of seasons. But yeah, they've got a lot of work to do, haven't they? And you know, Ferrari, if their reliability is as good as this race, they're could run away with this championship and be, you know, well up front early doors.
Yeah, a couple of friends of mine have got Sainz and Leclerc in their fantasy Formula One teams, and I think it's going to turn out to be a really good bet, you know. My missus, based on watching Drive to Survive, actually put a bet on Carlos Sainz to win the world championship, and I think it was 25-1. So, you know, that, you know, pretty good odds. And those two are going to battle it out throughout the season. You know, it's clear that Ferrari are the team to catch. When I was watching Lewis Hamilton in the race, I thought it was really interesting that he wasn't able to be aggressive going into corners with late braking and things. So when he was behind other cars, it was taking him a long while to overtake them. Normally, you know, he'd lunge down the inside and take the other car on the apex. He wasn't able to do that. So I think Mercedes have multiple issues. I think they have a power deficit that is not helping them at all. I think they have an aero issue, which is causing the porpoising, which we've seen throughout the race and throughout testing and practice and qualifying. And also, they seem to have a brake issue where they're not able to late brake.
Yeah, and again, looking at George Russell, you got to feel sorry for him where he's joined that team. You know, he's waited sort of three seasons to get into the top team. He's finally got into that team and they're just not that great. And, you know, for Bottas to be as close as he was in an Alfa Romeo in qualifying and in the race, you know, that's a big eye-opener as well for Mercedes, isn't it? But I feel a bit sorry for George Russell. But again, George Russell's a good example, Lando and Ricciardo. When you saw them being interviewed afterwards, they were so dejected. And I think that's hugely telling in the fact that they're like, we don't know where to start here. We're way off the pace and we literally don't know what we need to do, what we can do. You know, and that must be a worry for a team when they're just thinking, you know, if they know what the problem is, if they go, look, the problem's the engine, we've got an idea, we've got an upgrade coming next race, we'll be better next weekend. But they weren't like that. They were kind of like, yeah, we're at the back. You know, it's not good. You know, there's a lot of work to do to catch up with the top two teams. And this is the issue, you see. These top two teams will run away with this championship in these early few races. And then it's very hard to kind of catch back, isn't it? And I know Verstappen's already talking about, you know, this is championship changing material where, you know, if you get a DNF for both cars on the first race, you know, that's a huge point loss for Red Bull already. You know, and when you look at the championship standings, you got Haas in third place, and that's basically Kevin Magnussen, isn't it, in third place in the constructors. So, you know, it's all to play for at the moment, but I really do think reliability is going to be the big game changer this year.
I think we know that Mercedes, with all their resources and all their staff, will basically sort that car out within a couple of races. You know, they'll be right up there again on the pace, challenging the Red Bulls and the Ferraris. I think that will come pretty quickly. I think for teams like McLaren, it's a lot longer fix. You know, they don't have the resources of Mercedes. They're crippled with the engine because they're stuck with a Mercedes engine, which is not firing on all cylinders like the Ferrari power unit is. I think, you know, McLaren, and the reason that the drivers are so dejected is because they're going, you know what, we know that this isn't going to be an easy fix. This could be, you know, they could be 6 months down the line before they start clawing back the times in the car, you know.
Yeah, and looking at the standings now, 44 for Ferrari, second place Mercedes with 27, which you wouldn't have said, having watched that race, Haas in third with 10, and then you look at the bottom, you've got Red Bull 0, McLaren 0, Williams 0, Aston Martin 0, AlphaTauri only got 4, so already, you know, that's an incredible, incredible gain for Ferrari. It's, yeah, like you say, there's some teams that are going to be scratching their heads, not knowing what to do, but that is a long old season ahead of the McLaren boys, and again, you've got to feel a little bit sorry for Ricciardo, who kind of joined the McLaren team as the big star signing, didn't he? Really struggled last year, kind of got blown away by Lando. Lando then signed a new long-term contract on, I assume, a lot of money because he had such a good season. And then look where he's now sitting. He's going, great, I've just signed a 4 or 5 year contract with this team. And now I'm sat here going, great, you know, I'm in this car for the next couple of years. So it really is hit and miss, isn't it? When they have a season or a rule change like this in Formula One, you know, I remember when the new era came in when Mercedes were at the top, it really is hit and miss, isn't it? If you're the right driver in the right team at the right time, you clean up like Hamilton's done for the last few years. And if you're in the wrong team, like a McLaren at the moment or an Aston Martin, it's just not good, is it?
Yeah, I was Lando's on $12 million a year, by the way.
Is he?
Yeah, wow. That's on the new contract. So the two highest paid are Hamilton and Verstappen, who are both on $40 million a year, apparently. Alonso's on $20 million a year. Lando Norris 12 million, and most of the rest of the paid drivers are on around 10 million pounds a year. Yeah. So, you know, it's like they enjoy going racing, but they enjoy it even better with that sort of paycheck behind them. Well, I was really impressed with the Haas team. You know, they spent last year in the doldrums because they decided not to develop the 2021 car at all last year. So the car they started with was the car they finished with, and it was pretty lousy. But they took all their resources and all their interest and development into the 2022 car, and I'm so glad it seems to have paid off. But like I said before, you know, if Mazepin and Mick Schumacher had been the two drivers, would have they been in the top 10? It's only because K-Mag's come back that he's able to get a real good result out of that car, and I'd be really interested to see where Haas stay for the rest of this championship.
Yeah, and I think, you know, K-Mag to me drove like he was ecstatic about being back in that car. You know, you can tell with all the interviews he did, he just did not see this coming. He said, you know, a few times, I left Formula One the last time and I thought, that's it, that's me done. I've had two goes in Formula One, that's me done now, you know, that's my time done, I won't get another shot. And he said, and then this shot comes out the blue, and it's almost like he's ready for this now, because he's like, well, I've given it two goes before, I'm now in a car that it's not going to win necessarily, but it's up there. You know, he could get some podiums in that Haas team, particularly if we have some reliability issues up front. So, you know, he's now in a car that is decent and he can show off his skills a little bit. And, you know, he's still a young driver, Kevin Magnussen. So it's great to see people like that getting a chance. Hülkenberg's the same. Hülkenberg just keeps getting chance after chance after chance. Unfortunately for him, he always seems to be in one of the back running cars. That's the issue, isn't it? He can't really show off what he can do, which is frustrating for him. But yeah, it's, you know, it's fascinating so far. It's definitely going to be Red Bull versus Ferrari this year. Like you say, Mercedes will catch up without a doubt, because they always do. But, you know, to have a three-way fight for the title, it's going to be brilliant, isn't it?
And let's talk about tyres as well, because obviously the new 18-inch tyres are there. The pit lane mechanics are struggling because they're heavier than the previous tyres and they're more cumbersome to get hold of. So pit lane or pit times, we were talking sort of to the end of the 3-second mark, so sort of 3.7 seconds was a pretty decent stop. But those times will come down as the season goes on and they get used to handling those heavier and bigger tyres. I also thought, Guan Yu Zhou made a great debut, the first Chinese driver in the Alfa Romeo. I thought he was pretty good. He looked a little nervous in qualifying and admitted so afterwards, but in the race, he just got stuck in and made some pretty good overtaking moves.
Yeah, I thought when he got interviewed, I thought he came across really nice, very polite, very kind of respectful, and yeah, came across as a very, very nice guy. Like you say, to get points on your debut, I mean, that's a great start for him, isn't it? And I thought the same, thought a very mature, very decent drive. You know, sometimes you get these young kids that come in, they're a bit gung-ho, and they're trying to sort of prove everything on race one and lap one. But no, I thought he drove a very mature race, and yeah, seems like a very, very nice guy.
Yeah, definitely. And let's talk about the race itself. You know, it was fairly pedestrian, I thought, for most of the race. Interesting that the tyre choices were made fairly early on. It was Hamilton who was the first driver to go onto the hard tyre. And pretty quickly, in fact, as soon as he came out of the pitch, you thought, oh, that tyre's not looking good, because he was sliding all over the place. And it was pretty soon that most of the teams realised that the hard tyre was not the choice to use in Bahrain. Any team that went onto the hard tyre really, really struggled. It was the medium and the softs that were good. And it's also nice to see that the rule changes have come in, which means that you don't no longer need to start the race on the tyre you set your fastest time on in Q2. So you have a completely free tyre choice across the field. And it also means that they have to be careful how many soft tyres they use in practice and qualifying, because of course they get a certain amount of allocation for the race weekend, which means that if they use all their soft tyres to get a good grid position in qualifying, then of course they don't have many of them left to compete in the race with. I just thought the tyre choice and pit stops and things were fascinating, and of course the race itself fairly pedestrian. One thing that I think has been answered is, are these cars and the new design and the new aero, does it mean that they're easier to follow? And the answer is definitely yes. We saw so much close racing in Bahrain, which was really encouraging. The first two or three laps, I thought, all the cars are really close together here. This is going to be amazing. It took a while for them to spread out across the track.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we need. You know, we need close racing because, again, most people that are casual fans, they'll know that, you know, occasionally you'll go to a stag do and you'll go go-karting and all the go-karts are pretty much in a line, aren't they? And anyone can pass anyone. You're all in the same machinery. So when they see these Formula One cars all spread out and, you know, there's big gaps in between, they don't really understand why the other cars are so slow and so on and so forth. So to have them all close like that, to have them the ability for them to overtake like they did is brilliant. I was surprised with the tyres. I thought the tyres might last a bit longer. I was surprised at how quickly a lot of those tyres got chewed up, and you know, a lot of the teams were talking about doing a three stopper, which I was surprised at. I thought if anything, you know, the bigger tyres might be more durable and might last a bit longer and let them sort of race on these big tyres. Obviously Verstappen was moaning, wasn't he, on the radio about, you know, you should have let me push when I came out. If you'd let me push, I would have been in front. It's funny how these drivers, they get so used to being at the front, don't they? And so used to being at the top, they get very frustrated when things don't go their way. And I've noticed it with Hamilton. I've noticed it with Verstappen, you know, these top guys. They always want to go against their engineers, don't they? The team saying, do one thing. And the driver's always like, you sure? I feel like we should be doing this instead. Are you sure you're right? Are you sure? You know, they always think they know better than the team. But yeah, there was a lot of that with Verstappen this weekend. You always get a lot of that with Hamilton as well. You know, and Hamilton, I think over the years, has relaxed into that role a bit where he trusts the team a bit more now, and he still moans, but he will go with the team a lot and then he'll kind of moan on the radio, but then it usually turns out to be the correct call. But you've got to realise that, you know, the team has so much data, they have so many people looking at stuff that, you know, that are not driving the car. You know, I know it was Carlos Sainz, actually, who was saying that what's frustrating him the most is he's having to think about driving the car. So he's freeing up less brain space to race because he's thinking about what he's doing and thinking about driving the car because the car is different to drive. And I thought that was fascinating as well, that he was almost borderline frustrated that he couldn't free up more brain space to race because he was concentrating so much on how to drive that car, which is, again, a fascinating insight to their brains, isn't it, how they work?
Yeah, I mean, there was a bit of excitement on lap 17 and 18, wasn't there, when Verstappen was sort of passing Leclerc going into turn one. He did it on two consecutive laps with the aid of DRS and then sort of backed off a little bit because I think he over-fried his tyres a little bit. So that was good. And that, again, shows the new concept for these cars and the fact that you can go close racing. We've got Saudi Arabia coming up this weekend. I don't know about you, Scott, but it was one of my favourite races of last season. It's a fast and dangerous circuit. I think they've made some changes, apparently. But, you know, it's all walled in, so chances of hitting a wall very high, and the chances of getting close racing with these new cars is going to make it fascinating this weekend.
Yeah, very excited. Like you said, they called it a fast Monaco, didn't they?
Yeah.
When it came on the track, and it was a fascinating race last year. The order changing has freaked me out a little bit because it was completely different order last year, wasn't it? And not starting in Australia. I'm like, oh, this is weird. We're not starting in Australia. But yeah, 23 races this year as well, potentially. That's if they replace Russia, of course, which they haven't done yet, but they are expected to. But yeah, two races back to back. So this weekend we head off to Jeddah.
We're running well over time, but lots to talk about. Of course, let's get some stats from our stat man from At Lights Out. It's Nicky.
Leclerc ends Ferrari's second longest win drought. Magnussen records Haas's first top five result in almost 4 years. And Zhou scores on debut. Here are the top statistics from the 2022 Bahrain Grand Prix. Charles Leclerc took victory at the season-opening Bahrain Grand Prix, recording the third victory of his Formula One career. This was his first win since the 2019 Italian Grand Prix, and the first victory for Ferrari since Sebastian Vettel's win at the 2019 Singapore Grand Prix. The 2019 Marina Bay race was also the last time that the team recorded a 1-2 result. Leclerc's victory ended the second longest win drought in Ferrari's history. The only longer wait for victory for the team came between the 1990 Spanish Grand Prix and the 1994 German Grand Prix, a wait of 3 years and 10 months. Mercedes were not on the pace of Ferrari and Red Bull, but Lewis Hamilton was able to salvage a podium finish on a difficult weekend for the team. Hamilton's third place saw him become the first driver to score points in 250 Grand Prix. The 2022 Bahrain Grand Prix marked the 80th time that Hamilton has stood on the podium without winning the race. Kimi Raikkonen is the only other driver to have recorded as many second and third places in Formula One. Meanwhile, George Russell finished in fourth place, meaning that Fernando Alonso remains Hamilton's only teammate to finish ahead of him in their first race at the same team. After qualifying in seventh place, Kevin Magnussen finished in fifth. This was the first top five finish for a Haas driver since both Magnussen and Romain Grosjean finished in the top five at the 2018 Australian Grand Prix. Meanwhile, it was the first time that Haas have scored any points since the 2020 Eifel Grand Prix, and the first time that Magnussen has scored since his ninth place result at the 2020 Hungarian Grand Prix. While Mick Schumacher was unlucky to miss out on points in 11th place, Magnussen's 5th place means that Haas sit 3rd in the Constructors' Championship. It's the team's best ever placing in the standings. Their previous best was 4th place after the 2019 Australian Grand Prix. This weekend's race was the first to feature a Chinese driver. Zhou Guanyu impressed on his debut, scoring a point with 10th place on his first outing. As a result, China becomes the 34th nation to score a point in Formula 1, while Zhou is the 66th driver to score points in his maiden Grand Prix. With both Zhou and Valtteri Bottas in the points, this was the first time that both of the former Sauber team's drivers have finished in the points in Bahrain since 2008. And finally, Pierre Gasly was the first retirement from the 2022 Bahrain Grand Prix. Gasly became the 61st different driver to record the first DNF of a season. Gasly's retirement came after 45 laps, which is the longest into a season before a driver has retired. It broke a record which has stood for 65 years, since Peter Collins became the first retirement of the 1957 season, 27 laps into the race.
Nice one, Nicky. You can, of course, follow him at Lights Out on Twitter and across the race weekend. Some brilliant stats and facts all over his social media. He's just absolutely brilliant with his stuff. Every time I hear him speak, every time I see his stats on Twitter, I'm always blown away. Like, how does he work this out? Yeah. You know, he must keep so many bits of paper and so many computer programs with all these different stats and facts in. But yeah, as you mentioned before, we're off to the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix this weekend, off to Jeddah again. It's one of my favourite races actually last year. I wasn't quite sure what to expect, but it turned out to be a really good track because, like you say, not much room for error at all. Lots of high walls, very fast track, but lots of high walls. So a kind of very fast Monaco, which is, you know, it's what you want almost, a twisty, turny, you know, tight track, but also fast at the same time. So it shows all sorts of skill from the drivers.
Okay, so predictions for this weekend then, Scott?
I think we are going to see a bit of a resurgence from Red Bull. I think they'll be angry. They'll be willing to go. Verstappen particularly will be on it this weekend. So I think Verstappen's going to get pole, and I can see Verstappen getting the win. But I think the other two Ferraris are going to be the other two cars. I think it's going to be a very similar thing this season where it's going to be, you know, either one of the Ferraris winning and the other one on the podium, or a Max Verstappen win and the two Ferraris then on the podium. I think Perez is going to be fourth a lot this year. Not because he's not good, but I just think Perez he's not quite got the speed of the Ferraris, and he's not quite got the driving talent of the Verstappen, for example. So I think we're going to see a lot of Verstappen on either winning or being the only Red Bull on the podium and the other two being the Ferraris.
It wouldn't surprise me if Mercedes up their game. I think, you know, they've got three practice sessions before the Jeddah Grand Prix, then qualifying. I think they sorted a lot of their issues out in the practice sessions before Bahrain. I think they will have gone away and they will have crunched the data and they'll have looked at things, and Mercedes being Mercedes, so methodical in their work, I think they will have ironed out a lot of their issues before they get to the race in Saudi. So I wouldn't be surprised if Hamilton puts it in qualifying top three and also gets a podium in the race. I think Mercedes will be a lot closer to Red Bull and Ferrari than they were in Bahrain. And obviously Red Bull have got lots of data to go through, and they need to figure out where their reliability issues are coming from. And hopefully they'll be able to do that between now and the race in Saudi.
Yeah, lots of issues they had as well. They had the steering wheel issue with Verstappen. They had the engine braking type issue with both cars. So not just one thing they've got to concentrate on. I think they said the steering problem was when they dropped him down off the jacks, when they changed his tyres, dropped him down. It changed one of the pull rods and it just sent the steering really strange on both sides. So, you know, if they've got issues like that where they're dropping the car down and it's almost breaking parts of the car, you know, that's an issue they need to sort out ASAP as well, because that can happen in any race then.
Yes, we're well overrun in time. We will be back next week to review the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. Have a good time. And in the meantime, make sure you tell your friends about Two Soft Compounds on the podcast. We'll see you later.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.